The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Man, one of my staffers just sent me this. For all my Thurston County listeners, I will be fighting for you. They have a proposal. This is insane. They voted by a 2-1 margin. They only have 3 county commissioners in Thurston County. They voted to raise property taxes 38% in Thurston County so they can build a $300 million courthouse. Sounds a tad bit excessive. So I'm just finding out about this, but I got your back there in Thurston County. 38% property tax increase. Absolute insanity. But that's not what I'm here to talk about, although I will talk about that plenty in the future if that madness goes forth. But we do have a lot of stuff from over the weekend and into today. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
If you were to find Seattle's city twin, it would either be San Francisco or Portland. San Francisco, where the homelessness is just as bad as Seattle. Portland, where the violent left have taken over the streets. And in Portland, they have a mayor, Ted Wheeler. And how this guy hasn't been kicked out of office yet, he should be personally sued for his failure to uphold any lawlessness in Portland over the weekend. If you are at all active on social media, you no doubt have seen what happened in Portland this weekend. There's a journalist, Andy Ngo. He's an independent journalist, and he often tracks the violence of left-wing Antifa. And what happened to Andy Ngo in Portland this weekend? Okay, now one of the things that they're doing is it's called milkshaking. It's kind of the new trendy fad to throw milkshakes at people with whom you have political or social ideological disagreements. But these weren't just any milkshakes. It wasn't milk and ice cream. It was quick drying cement that were in the cups being thrown at this guy. It's also worth noting that even though he is a conservative journalist, Andy Ngo is a rather small, he's gay, he's Asian. If a petite gay Asian man was attacked at, say, a Trump rally, it would be the front page story. It would be the lead story on CNN and MSNBC for weeks. And you would hear about it for years. But because he's a conservative journalist who tracks left-wing violence, it gets buried by the mainstream media.
Get out of here, Andy!
There's that one guy. Get out of here, Andy! They targeted him. They said on Twitter that they were going to target him. Not only did they throw the quick dry cement milkshakes at him, he has bleeding on the brain. He's in the ER. They stole his camera equipment. Then they sprayed him with silly string. And then they cheered. They cheered like a bunch of maniacs as he was being tended to by people who could help him get to the hospital. In another very notable incident, there is an older man. He's white-haired, and he's being attacked by these left-wing thugs with a crowbar, and they crack his head open. He has blood streaming down his face. Another man came in to help the elderly guy, and they took a crowbar to him, cracked his skull open. And this is the kind of violence. I told you last week about the young man who just wound up and blindside sucker punched a waitress right by Voodoo Donuts on the streets of Portland, shattered her eye socket, and reportedly was given a misdemeanor and released when he could have been charged with attempted murder. But this is what happens when you have politicians who turn over the streets to the biggest thugs among us. And when you have a media that tries to spin everything. For example, there was the group called the Proud Boys. And they were identified by CBS News as the right-wing Proud Boys clashed with Antifa. Why wouldn't you call them the left-wing Antifa? Because they are. And where they fall on the political spectrum is every bit as relevant as where the Proud Boys fall. But that's not the way the media operates. The media will label everybody and everyone they can right-wing, and they will leave off any similar designation for those on the far left because they think that it hurts their party. And the Democrat Party is clearly the party of the national media for the most part. And so it's very sad to see what's going on down in Portland, our sister city in so many ways. But we see it here. We see it when protesters put their arms in PVC pipe and bind it with duct tape and lay in the middle of a street so they could gridlock all of downtown Seattle for 8 hours. And our cops and our mayor does nothing about it. But where were the cops as people were getting cracked in the skull with crowbars yesterday? Their rap all the time is, well, if we show up, things will escalate. It's time, if somebody's swinging crowbars, it's time that you use real force. Because they could kill somebody by hitting them in the head with a crowbar. And if that means that you have to use even lethal force against them, well, that's how you stop a crowbar from swinging. I hope it never gets down to that. I hope we are not there, but if the cops won't, the other side will. And we're going to see some chaos, and it's growing rapidly. It's growing like a wildfire right now in all of these crazy left coast, left wing cities. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
And then you had Joe Biden, who is bragging about all the money that he raised in Seattle this weekend. Joe Biden went to some big PR guy, a bunch of high-tech people were there. And it's so interesting to me how Hillary did this, Obama did this. They treat the Northwest as their fundraising piggy bank. They don't have to. The Democrat candidate will carry Washington State no matter what. Unless it's Inslee. He might not. But the Democrats are going to carry Washington State. But they come out here, they collect their millions of dollars in donations, and then they go on their merry way, never to think about us again. But Joe Biden, oh my goodness, he put his foot in his mouth. And this has been his biggest challenge, is they're afraid if they turn Joe loose, his handlers are afraid that he will say a gaffe that is particularly radioactive. Well, this is what Joe Biden said at the Seattle fundraiser. Nobody seems to have audio of it, but a lot of people reported it. He said that just 5 years ago, it was accepted for businessmen to make fun of a gay waiter, he said. These comments came at the home of public relations executive Roger Nihu, where the event was hosted. And the people who were attending it, they started catcalling Joe. They said, no, not in Seattle. That wouldn't have been acceptable. Where would that have been acceptable in 2014 to make fun of a gay waiter? I've never made fun of a gay waiter or gay person. Where in the world, in what reality, Joe Biden was halfway through their second term as Obama Biden, president and VP. When he says that in 2014, it was acceptable for a businessman to make fun of a gay waiter, Where was that accepted? I'm not saying it never happened, but it was never acceptable. And people would be reprimanded for it if anybody heard it. And he said that in 2015, the next year, the Supreme Court ruled the Defense of Marriage Act unconstitutional. But he said a year earlier, that kind of thing was allowed. Not that I recall, Joe, but he got his millions and went on his merry way. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead. I told you so.
Oh, man. Golden Gardens. I got a place in my heart for Golden Gardens. Spent a lot of my childhood down there. Would ride my bike down, would walk down, would spend time just mainly riding my bike around the marina, around the windjammer. Dump the bike, go into the water. Right now, don't go in the water at Golden Gardens. They said that we knew that there was a raw sewage leakage into the water there. They said that they thought it was 16,000 gallons. No, it's 10 times that. It's 165,000 gallons. Zell Public Utilities said the overflow was caused by a blockage in the sewer system north of the park. And so nobody can swim there as we're coming up to these 80-degree days because of all the raw sewage flowing. Now, again, they've told people in rural King County that they want you to pay a yearly fee for your septic tank in case a little bit of it leaks and a little bit of that gets into a stream and a little bit of that gets into the river and a little bit of that gets into the sound. But when government has a problem that leads to 165,000 gallons. You know, we had hundreds of millions of raw gallons off of Discovery Park a couple of years ago. They are ready to just beat you up and make you pay if you lose a couple of drops. But they can lose 165,000 gallons and nothing happens. Who's in charge? Why do we continually? And by the way, and then they always tell us, oh, the sound healed itself. Every time the government pours raw sewage in, they tell us how resilient the sound is and how it heals itself. But they tell you how you have to alter your life so you will never get one drop of anything in the sound. Why is it that the sound is fragile if we pollute it by a tiny amount, but it's resilient when government pollutes it by thousands of times that? Could it be that they're lying about the fragility when we do something? Oh, and finally, in the big lead.
The big lead, top trending.
This is just absolutely unbelievable. Video and audio. A Florida cop, Aaron Blaze, he conducted a traffic stop on a 38-year-old guy, Rocky Rudolph Jr., because Rocky Rudolph had windows that were illegally tinted. And so the deputy walked up, did a routine traffic stop. Let me see your license, registration. And the guy's got it must be marijuana because the cop can smell marijuana. He's got a marijuana cigarette in some kind of a plastic holder, and he refuses to turn off the car. And the deputy says, hey, you don't have to be nervous, man. Tinted windows and marijuana is not that big a deal in Florida.
What's that?
Just a little
bit. Okay. There's no need to be nervous, man.
Yeah, man. I was wondering. You know, I did. I thought it was a light or something. Looking like, no, you run the light.
Tent.
Yeah.
It's pet peeve of mine. I was just trying to see where you were going because it's seriously unsafe to be pulling cars over there, man. So I don't know.
Oh, that's what I was wondering. Like,
I try and follow somebody until they get in a safe area.
Oh, okay.
For me.
Okay.
You know, yeah. And then I attempt to stop.
So it sounds like a pretty friendly traffic stop. And then the deputy talks about him getting a new license while the suspect's looking for his insurance card.
It's also going to be about time for you to get a new license.
Yeah, I know I get all that stuff straightened out. I've been so busy, man.
Right? No,
I
feel you. Y'all working today?
No.
Well, unfortunately, today being your day off, everything else is closed, too.
Okay, and the cop then noted that he does smell weed in the car.
Mr. Rudolph.
Yes, sir.
Is there any reason why there would be a hint, faint of weed coming out of your vehicle? Do you smoke? Do you have any friends that smoke? Anything like that?
No, sir. Just black and mild. Probably black and mild smoke.
Nah, I know the difference between black and mild smoke and this and that. Do you have any marijuana in the car?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay, so now, at worst, tinted windows, marijuana, not a big deal. But then it escalated like you can't believe.
Okay. Yeah, I did too. I had to go to the bathroom, something fierce.
Oh, that was you I seen back then. I just rolled through there.
You see me go in there, go to the bathroom, come back out.
Okay, I just rolled through and dropped the chick off at work and yeah, okay. I seen the car back then. I don't think, man. First thing in the morning.
All right. Can you do me a favor and just shut the car off for me?
What happened, sir?
Huh? Well, I smell marijuana, and you don't have a card, so I'm not. Listen. I'm not.
Now I should say the video that accompanies this. It's the cop's body cam video where you can see the guy driving the car, and then they have a little insert in the lower right of the car's dash cam video, and what happens next is absolutely horrifying.
I'm not concerned with some personal use stuff, man. It doesn't even warrant my time. Would you mind shutting the car off, please? Huh?
I'm smoking a black car.
I understand. Just shut the car off for me, please. Okay? All right. 2513, somehow. Step him up, please.
Guy's still not shutting the car off.
It's no big deal. I mean, I'm not.
Bro, you going to take me from a license to a marijuana, bro?
Listen. Do me a favor. I'm telling you.
Okay, now the guy starts to drive off with the cop reaching in to try to turn off the car.
Right now. I'm telling you right now. Stop.
He's dragging the cop down the street. The cop has unholstered his gun and is pointing the gun at the driver. The driver with one hand is reaching for the gun while driving away with the other hand.
Stop! Put it in park! Put your hands up! Put your hands up! Even though he's just trying to take off with me, step him up now! Sir, I'm telling you! Put your hands up! Put your hands up! Put your hands up! I swear to God! Put your hands up! You put it in park!
Now he's dragging the cop down the street at high speed. They go off on the shoulders. The cop goes rolling out into the dirt, maybe at 20, 30 miles an hour. Other cops were on their way. They were able to catch the guy after an 8-hour pursuit. Instead of having a citation for tinted windows and maybe the marijuana, Rocky Rudolph Jr. is now facing attempted murder charges for what he did to that police officer. And I tell you what, that cop is the ultimate in restraint. That he didn't shoot that guy when he was being dragged down the road is an amazing display of restraint by that cop. All of that is your fastest 15, or your big lead, I should say, for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Hey, it's Monday afternoon. That'd be a good time to bring in our Monday Monson quarterback, Brock Huard, will join me next here on the Dory Monson Show.
It's the Monday Monson quarterback.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. With a 12s, here the Hawks.
Play fake to Benny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline, reaching up, making the catch, touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
It is Monday afternoon, and that means it's time for a weekly visit with the Monday Monson quarterback. Brock Huard is with us. Still got a little bit of
fish odor on you from out fishing this weekend?
Oh, it was so beautiful. Oh, you got to get up there. Captain Tom, while we were in Alaska, for your listeners, on a trip that you love more than anything, and your name came up Saturday night when we were out on his boat.
Hope so.
We were chatting about it with Molly, and Molly even said to me, she said, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Dory's wife and daughters think he would be miserable in Alaska? And I was like, oh, no, that absolutely. That was right. I think that was a lot of people's thinking.
Yes.
But, you know, you just loved it. And Captain Tom was talking about you, and he's like, I've had so many people on the boat. But Dory just had this, like, I think it's not going to just be a one and done. I think he's going to be back fishing again in his life. And let me tell you this. If he invites you on his boat here locally, like we got to do the other night, please go.
Okay.
It's a lot easier. B, it's beautiful in June and July. It's so convenient to get right to the fishing. And we had a blast Saturday night putting a line in the water out in the Sound over on the Tulalip Bubble where it is open and gorgeous.
Okay. So I'm in. I'm all on board. So I was listening to a podcast last night. And, you know, I always like to try to think of different angles that I can talk with you about. It was Conan O'Brien interviewing Martin Short. And Martin Short's always been kind of a comedy hero of mine. Back to the SCTV days, I just thought he was brilliant. And Conan asked him, you've had a chance to meet so many people. Who's the one that just blew you away? You've had a lot of chances to meet people. Who's the one, Brock Huard, that in all your opportunities you've had in life, you just still say, can't believe I did that?
Yeah, I think there's probably two. I'll give you one in the entertainment world, and I'll give you one in the sports world, and for varying and different reasons. My senior year of high school, Dory, I was invited back to this conference in Williamsburg, Virginia. And I don't know if they do it still today. I don't think they do, but it was like a couple hundred of us from around the country. There were a few athletes. I was kind of on the student athlete end of it. There were so many brilliant scholars and students. And we got a chance to go back there and meet, some brilliant, brilliant people. And the one guy that made a mark, even then, it was just one afternoon. He was in kind of a seminar, and then we got a chance to sit and meet them, was John Grisham. And I thought, that guy is such an amazing writer. I had read a few of his books, and yet he was the most down to earth. And I've kind of kept reading some of his books and through the years, and just left a strong mark in just a few hours of being around him. So I probably put him up there. And then,
That inspired. I have to add one more to my list because you said that. Okay.
And then I would say Tom Brady would be the other. And Tom Brady, I met, who was younger than me. I met him in his first year playing in 2001. Uncle Damon, my brother, but Uncle Damon and my kiddos, was playing for the Patriots. And his wife, Julie, and Molly and I, and Tom Brady, and I want to say it was like his college or high school girlfriend, the six of us went out for an Italian dinner in Boston. And this was before they were going to play the Raiders in that Snow Bowl game.
Oh, yeah.
This was the weekend before they had a bye week. They were in the playoffs. And I remember just meeting him when he was just like Tom, like with a backpack on, normal. And yet Damon told me before, and he's like, just wait. This dude is just different.
Special.
And we're walking around the blocks after dinner, and like, this guy just, like, he was so convincing in his belief and conviction that the team was going to win a Super Bowl, that he was going to be great, and you just got that sense. Even sitting down with him for just a few hours before he was ever the big star he became.
I wonder where that came from. Yeah, because he didn't start most of the time at Michigan. He was a middle
round draft pick. Some practice squad his first year.
Where does that come from?
Damon will tell you. He just had this just belief that he was great. It didn't matter the circumstance. He really was so headstrong, kind of like the guys that we love in this town, the Pete Carrolls and the Russell Wilsons that are so uber positive, so headstrong. Like, yeah, of course I'm going to make it. Of course I'm going to be great. Of course we're going to win Super Bowls. And, yeah, he just oozed so much of that even before he ever had that level
of accomplishment. I'd like to get next level with him. I'd like to have a conversation like we're having today and really try to find out the source of that, other than, you know, that he just always knew. I mean,
his mom and dad played a huge role in that. Had a stable home, had sisters, had a pretty, you know, I think, stable upbringing. And I think he had a mom and dad that empowered him to be great. That just, you know, much like my wife Molly, who went on to be a college basketball player, she would tell you that her dad and mom, but her dad was so empowering. Like, you're going to be great. You can accomplish whatever you want. If you want to play in the WNBA, you have the ability to do it. And I think poured in so much of that encouragement. And I think Brady's mom and dad played a huge, huge role in that mindset.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
How about you? You have a couple? Have you shared them with your audience?
I don't think I have. When you mentioned John Grisham, Michael Lewis, who wrote Moneyball and the football one? The
Blindside?
Blindside. Mm-hmm. And a lot of great financial books. I read his first ever book in '87. Liar's Poker, exactly. And fell in love with it. And turned out that he would come into the studio every time he had a new book out and would just come and hang out with me for an hour. Mm-hmm. And he's one of those guys who remembered everything about my family and would come back a year later and ask how my girls are doing and are they still coaching basketball.
Wow.
And he'd bring his little daughter and she'd call her in the newsroom and I'd text him every once in a while. Have you ever read the book Ball Four?
No.
Okay. I was 7 years old when the Seattle Pilots were here for one season, 1969. So I was 8 years old when the book came out a year later. And it was dirty. It was nasty. Told about how baseball players would put mirrors under hotel doors to look at naked women. Yeah, I'm 8 years old. I had no idea. I thought these guys were all just gods. But I was fascinated. But Mickey Mantle was drunk, striking out in a spring training game. I mean, I'd never heard any of these things. I read that book 25 times, Brock. And so when I got Jim Boughton, who wrote that book, in the studio, and I was so captivated, I said, can you stay another hour? I did 2 hours with the man.
Wow.
It was, yeah, because that was my Bible when I was a kid. Yeah. So
writers have that kind of ability. That kind of gifting. I think many writers are such incredible readers themselves, and I think just listeners, and they have to take in. And you know, in some ways, you're a writer, right? I know how much time and energy you spent writing your playwright, for your show, and how invested in that you were. Writers can be some of the most fascinating people you'll ever be around.
Yeah. And then Martin Short was on my list.
Sure.
Too, because I got to do some stuff on stage with him a couple of years ago, and he was a comedy hero. Okay, let's talk about some other stuff that's going on. So now, is this the way it's just going to be forevermore in the NBA, that teams are just going to spend $200 million on guys, and those guys are going to collude with each other and say, well, let's all go there. Let's all go to the Lakers, play with LeBron.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be that way forevermore.
Yeah,
now.
Those baseball guys and football guys are going to look on the side and go, how do those guys do it? How do they make that happen? How are they so powerful? Well, I think their numbers certainly help them. They're the elite of the elite. I will say the first 6 hours of NBA free agency, $2.3 billion was spent.
Was it really?
$2.3 billion was spent. I think like $600 million in just this next season alone. The one thing I do like about it, and I think Toronto started this last year, is it's not just the same three or four franchises. We're not going to see that. Brooklyn's going to become relevant. Milwaukee became relevant. Toronto just won a championship. Golden State became relevant. Like, there's going to be more and more teams that I think involved in that when those players decide, nope, this is where we're going to go. And you know what else? Bad owners don't get rewarded. James Dolan's a terrible owner. I don't think he's a great person with the New York Knicks. And I don't care that you play in Madison Square Garden and you got a really neat history. Like, if you're a bad dude, you're not going to get this talent. You're not going to get our services. Robert Sarver in Phoenix, sorry, man, you're a bad businessman. You've treated people badly. And I'm not going to just come play for you because you're Phoenix in the Valley of the Sun with some history and beautiful weather. No. Like, I'm going to take my talents where, and by the way, combine them with other guys that I want to be with, and we'll take our talents to work for the organization we want to work for. A whole lot more labor power than any of the other professional sports.
Do you think it's coming back to Seattle, NBA?
Yes. Yeah, I think I don't have any question about that. When that new arena gets up and gets going in the next couple years, I think within the next five, if I had to hedge my bet, I don't know if it's going to happen before then, but that'd probably be my bet.
Okay.
Too much money, Dory. Too many resources. Too much opportunity.
A lot of rich people here.
Too much love for basketball. Yeah.
All right, good stuff. Brock Huard, you can hear him every morning, 7 to 10 on 710 ESPN Seattle. You surprised me with John Grisham.
Yeah.
That surprised me.
Kind of out of left field.
Yeah, I like that.
American Academy of Achievement. That's what it was called. It just hit me 12 minutes later. The American Academy Achievement met Robin Williams. I believe Oprah was there. Clancy was there. It was an amazing, amazing weekend.
Okay.
All right. You go.
Have you read The Testament?
I dropped enough names on you right
now. The Testament? His book?
Oh, yes. That's really good, too.
South America?
Woo! Yeah. Yes.
Oh. Okay, Brock Huard is with us, was with us. That is the Money Months quarterback, brought to you by IRG, Physical and Hand Therapy. And we do have lots more straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show
rolls on.
Always checking out the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. Love to hear your thoughts on any and all things we're talking about, or even stuff we're not talking about. If you want to go random on us, in the Democrat debates last week, the most desperate line of the two nights seemed to come from Julian Castro, who wanted to prove that he was the most woke person on stage.
I guess it would. I don't believe only in reproductive freedom. I believe in reproductive justice. And, you know, what that means is that just because a woman, or let's also not forget someone in the trans community, a trans female, is poor, doesn't mean they shouldn't have the right to exercise that right to choose.
Okay, so he's going to provide abortions for those in the trans community. And as I said, well, there's no such thing as a pregnant man. You can only be pregnant if you have a uterus, and only women have uteri. So, in fact, here's what I said the next day. So even if you don't have a uterus, he will pay for your abortion. Woo! Yeah! You know, frankly, that's not going to cost us a fortune as taxpayers. Bunch of maroons. Okay, so then I got a bunch of those insensitive. Yeah, yes, a man can get pregnant, Dory. No, a man cannot get pregnant. To get pregnant, you must have a uterus. Only women have uterus. Therefore, a man cannot get pregnant. But you know what? Are all the lefties outraged when far-left comedian Bill Maher essentially said the exact same thing that I said on Real Time on HBO on Friday night?
Julian Castro won the woke Olympics on the first night when he said trans females should have the right to an abortion. I agree. Now, if only they had a uterus. Try selling that in the red states. If a man identifies a woman, then we stand with her right not only to imagine that she's pregnant, but to terminate that pregnancy, which is not possible.
When I say the exact same thing, I get all these lefties who torture themselves by listening to me and get them emailing me and texting me saying, that was insensitive. When far-left Bill Maher says the exact same thing, laughter and applause. He probably stole it from me. And then the president made history this weekend. He was in the DMZ between North and South Korea, but stepped over the line to become the first American president ever to stand in North Korea.
I just want to say that this is my honor. I didn't really expect it. We were in Japan for the G20. We came over and I said, hey, I'm over here. I want to call up Chairman Kim. And we got to meet, and stepping across that line was a great honor. A lot of progress has been made. A lot of friendships have been made. And this has been, in particular, a great friendship. So I just want to thank you. That was very quick notice, and I want to thank you.
And so we'll see if it bears fruit, but because Kim's a whack job. But any effort to try to denuclearize the peninsula there should be applauded, I would think. But many cannot applaud anything this president does. Fast 15, it's coming up next.